Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, people? Hope you are having a great day and a great week so far. Podcast time, and this week got the one and only Wongo. I've known Wongo for many years, through parties, being on the road, and his record label Box of Cats. He hit me up about a month ago and kind of talked to me about some parties that he's been throwing in Australia, kind of as COVID is kind of coming to an end over there and things are opening up. And I was really interested. I really wanted to get him on the show, and I'd never really had a full-on conversation with him. So it was really nice to just get him on and have like a great conversation. I think if you know Wongo, you're going to actually really love this conversation. And if you don't know Wongo and you don't know who he is as a person, I think you're really going to kind of find somebody that you now fall in love with. So without further ado, Wongo. It is 6 a.m. in Australia right now, 8 p.m. in the UK. Thank you for waking up well early to do this.
You know what's fucked up is I still, after all those times of telling you what time to chat, it's actually 5 a.m. But I woke up at like 4:30 and I was just like, you know how you just got something in your head?
Yeah.
And I checked the phone and I was like, yeah, it's nearly 8 p.m. London time. So I was like, I better get the fuck up.
Sorry, but, man. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. How's life? I think last time I saw you was like nearly 2 years ago.
Yeah. I'm not, life's great. I during the lockdown and everything last year, it was have a baby, buy a house, start a new company.
Oh, amazing.
It was like, okay, well, look, I've lost my job. what can we do to fill our time?
Yeah, and congrats on the baby as well. I remember when was it she was born?
Yeah, she, yeah.
Yeah. How are you finding that?
Amazing. Yeah, I feel like there's like a sleep thing that definitely is there, but you know, as long as you just pretend that that's a normal thing, which it is, it's like your brain just keeps moving on. And plus, obviously, Jess, like my wife, takes the brunt of everything. And I sleep pretty well, but I mean, at the same time, you know, that's, you know, as far as like happiness and good vibes, it's like 100% there.
So lockdown's been, although it's been shit, it's been pretty good for you. Like buying a new house, starting new things up, and having a baby is kind of like big life moves, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like I haven't had a chance to grow up over the last however many years because I'm too busy being a juvenile.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of people that... I had a chance. I think there's been...
I feel like every time... Minus one, sorry.
No, go on, carry on. I think there's a delay, which is annoying, but go for it. You go.
Okay, I was going to say, I feel like every time minus one that I've met you, I've probably been in some kind of state. But
well, yeah, I was actually thinking about this the other day. I was like, this is probably why, like, we actually haven't, like, caught up much, because it's like every time we see each other is always like, apart from the last time we hung out, which is really nice, but every time apart from that, it's just like everyone's just absolutely shit-faced, and you're just like, you just can't like,
and I blame it on loud music.
Yeah, exactly, but it's all good, man. It's all good. How's how's the record label going?
Good, man. Yeah, so we've kind of, our schedule's full till November now.
So for anybody that doesn't know, you run Box of Cats with Kyle, right?
Yeah, there's a bunch of us that kind of work behind the scenes, but Kyle's kind of like the pretty face and I'm the ugly face. You know, like the smiling clown and the clown.
You're pretty sexy, it's fine.
I mean, I'm married, it doesn't matter anymore. but yeah, so like the actual label's going well. Like there was a dip in, you know, sales in the business side of things at the start of COVID, but all that's come back and everything's nice, and you know, streaming numbers are up, and now it's kind of, we're in a position where we want to grow the company again, like either opening up a sister label or starting to run parties, or you know, it's time to expand, because we've...
Do you think do you think the streams have gone up now? Or do you
So I mean, at least for us, I'm not sure, like we have always kind of specialized in club music that doesn't stream very well. Yeah. But we've the last like few months we've been trying to, or you know, middle of last year we were trying to sign some records that might be a little bit more stream worthy.
Yeah.
And we've noticed a pickup straight away. So, you know, I'm not sure if that's just a better job on Distro's half or better job because the tracks are a little bit more accessible or what it is. But, I mean, we're doing a little bit better than we were.
Yeah, streaming's really interesting, isn't it? Because, obviously, the club music really isn't made to stream. It's just how people consume music. It just isn't dance music, because it's understandable. Most people just want to listen to club music when they want to go out or get ready to go out, and that's about it. And also I think when you've got the likes, like when you've got all the pop stars kind of on there just taking up the bandwidth, it's like the dance stuff is a very small niche in that, if you know what I mean. But I do think it's like, it's weird because I've noticed a massive drop in, not a massive drop, but quite a big drop in streams since lockdown hit, purely because there's no clubs. And I think people just aren't getting introduced to music on the dance floor.
Maybe that's why something's kind of starting to shift back here in Australia. Maybe that's got something to do with it, because people are clubbing and actually enjoying themselves.
Shazam is a killer. Like Shazam is great, and if the only thing people can kind of go by on Shazam, like Shazam and stuff, is on the radio, it's like, well, not many people listen to radio anymore, do they?
No, for sure. It's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just the way it is. You know, we live in a club music is a niche on its own already. Totally. So, you know, and we work in niches of the niche, and you can't expect money when you work in a niche. You have to kind of just do it for the love of it.
Yeah, it's weird that, isn't it? Because we live in such a commercialized industry, and kind of there's that want for to earn more money and like just keep earning and keep kind of getting more and more and more. And then realistically, there is a limit. There is a point where it's like, well, hang on a minute, you're not selling millions of tickets. You're not streaming tens, hundreds of millions of records. It's really weird. Yeah. It's really weird because we sit right next to the pop stars. So, like, we're on the same lineups in festivals. Yeah. So it's like, you're just like,
yeah, full.
It's very hard to like not compare yourselves against them, right?
Well, it's easy hard. It's very easy getting mixed up in it as well. Like, especially in Australia, where most of our nightclubs are playing top 40 music. You know, it shows in influences in my music, like naturally, because that's kind of the world that I live in. So, you know, I'm releasing a track that might be 115 and then a track that's 128, you know, 3 months later. Mm. And that's naturally just because of the atmosphere in Australia and trying, not trying to so much fit in, because I do like writing that stuff, but it's what gets me paid gig wise at the end of the day, really.
Yeah.
You know, if I could write just fucking kick drums and bass lines all day and, you know, I would. Yeah. I just don't live in the right country for that.
Yeah, I guess that's the interesting thing about the Australian climate, is that it's always so far away from anything else. And not saying it's behind, but it's like, it's so far away. So to get that over there, it's kind of like hard work. Unless it's like there's some bands in Australia that are from Australia and only big in Australia, if that makes sense.
For sure.
And they're huge. Yeah. They're like colossus. But like,
yeah.
What's your thoughts on the Australian scene?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of our scene's based around Triple J, which is our national kind of cool radio station. And they, although they have been putting some extra energy into putting dance records on recently, over the last 5 or 6 years, it's been predominantly indie bands. Mm. And so naturally, all the festival lineups are indie bands, which is, you know, if people are listening to cool music and they're cool bands and they're writing sick records, but there's not a crossover between that into dance music. Dance music's, you know, then we might get a side stage at a festival or something like that. But recently, I feel like it's something is changing. Triple J, I reckon, have been asked to start supporting, you know, indie dance music as well. And I feel like it's coming up, you know. So, I mean, I just played a bush doof in like, you know, 3 hours away from where I live, and it was like electronic music all day and night. And, you know, this is, you know, with alternative people, and it was just fucking thumping. So it was sick.
Can you explain bush tuff to the rest of the world?
I was wondering, people use that as a term. So doofing in as far as what other people think is something far different to what it is here. but a bush tuff is really just a place for people to come together and, you know, be free and listen to music and party and dance. And it's a festival. It's a bush festival that's not your normal day-to-day 9-to-5 work life people.
And what's a bush in America, in Australia?
I guess the forest.
Yeah.
What would you call it?
Yeah, I'd call it like the off the beaten trail. Right. Yeah, like that. Like not where you would normally come across, like middle of nowhere. But the thing is, in America, in Australia, you have so much land. So it's like, there's just so much out there that you can just
This is like 2 hours drive from like a major city. And even when we were getting there, we were on a dirt road for, you know, I think like 30 kilometers before we even got to the property was on. And then it was another 20 kilometers on that property until we actually found the event space. It was fucking in the middle of nowhere, but it was sick.
Yeah. I remember playing Rabbit Eats Lettuce once.
Okay. That's what it was.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, and it was just like, it's like, what the hell is this? Like, where are we going? But it's an amazing place. It is like a very, I guess if anyone listening in America, the closest thing to it, I would say, is like Desert Hearts Festival, maybe.
Okay.
Where it's like very out of the way, like no one around and kind of no roads or anything. But
what I actually find really crazy is, so like, even though Australia is really far ahead of a lot of countries with COVID and that kind of stuff, this festival, I didn't see one policeman. I barely saw a security guard. I didn't see any licensing. You know, there wasn't bars. It was all BYO, which was actually nice because people kind of are responsible for their own drinking and don't overdrink and all that kind of stuff, which is good. But it was very, very free, even for COVID times in Australia. It was, you know, especially when we're organizing a party for next week and it's very red tape everywhere.
Yeah, I I like the idea of that.
It was nice. It was really nice.
Is there like reservations, like on how, when people go there, like do people get worried, or is it like everyone's just chilling?
I feel like everyone's respectful of each other anyway.
Yeah.
Like no one's in each other's grill. Like the event space and dance floors are so big that kind of social distancing isn't a problem. And if, you know, if you want to be close to somebody and they want to be close to you, you can kind of, there's room to do that. You know, and there wasn't, people weren't moshing because that's not kind of the people that were there. And so I felt like everyone was there and they did their own thing and no one really bothered them if they didn't want to be bothered. But, you know, people who wanted to be bothered would go walking around talking to everybody while hoping everyone was having a great day.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that. Cause I think that's part of the issue that we're probably going to find is that the weird thing about COVID is, and I don't want to kind of talk about it too much, but it's given the people that like power over people in society, not just like government or anything, just in society, has given them a green ticket or a golden ticket to be like, to be a dick and try and overhaul power over people. And I that's the one thing I don't like about this. It could get pretty messy.
It's fun. I've gone extra quiet. Like I reckon my personality in the last 12 months has kind of sizzled down and letting people do their thing because I want to be able to just do my thing. And, you know, I'm abiding by the rules and all that kind of thing. But at the same time, I'm just, you know, letting people live their life because everyone emotionally deals with things differently. Like, you know, people rebel and people accept.
I totally agree. And I think also a lot has happened in the world, right? A lot has changed in considering, like, in a year it's been going on. Like, it's not just been COVID. It's a lot has happened in the world, and a lot has changed. Good things, and I wouldn't say bad things, but interesting things, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think it's got a lot noisier out there. There's a lot of people chucking their two cents in and telling everyone what they should and shouldn't be doing. And I think sitting back and just doing your own thing. You've got, I don't know if it kind of changed for you, like with having a kid and kind of having a few more responsibilities in life, but it's like, let me just live my life.
For sure. I stopped watching the news. Yeah. So that was in the last 6 months, I just don't watch the news now. So you know, I still obviously know what's happening around the world because I don't want to be an idiot, but I purposely don't watch the news that I feel like people's, you know, reporters' emotions get into it and make it something that it's not. Or, you know, even I just want to read headlines and understand kind of what's going on rather than, be pushed in a certain direction. Yeah, either way.
Yeah, it's strange how it's so strange how it's like, this whole situation, it's kind of gone very, is it the same in Australia where it's very divided on
it's left and right.
It's mad.
I know. And I feel like I'm a middle person and I'm quiet. So what I'm in my head is imagining that there is still a nice middle, but we've all just been told to pipe down for a while.
Yeah. We're not allowed to kind of be, well, not allowed, that's probably the wrong thing to say, but it's more so like it's really weird. It's really hard to kind of say how it is.
But, and I agree with, I actually agree with both sides in certain different things, you know, especially totally. At least the way Australia thinks. And, but I just don't feel like I have to be either side, which a lot of people feel like you have to choose a side.
No, I agree.
And, you
know, I feel like there's a balance for everything, and right now the pendulum is swinging both ways, and the pendulum's not landed and not settled in the middle yet, and kind of rational people have kind of, or irrational people have kind of got a little bit more rational, and people are showing a little bit more respect to each other and kind of respecting other people's thoughts and opinions, because realistically, at this moment in time, it feels like we live in a culture where you're not allowed to if you disagree with somebody, you can't be friends with them, you can't have anything to do with them, and that's bullshit.
That's very strange.
Yeah, it's not
the way I kind of look at that.
Go on.
So the way I kind of look at that is the same as, like, when I was a child, I was told not to talk about politics or religion. Like, that was kind of, my grandma was like, that was the one thing that you just don't start in a conversation with other people. Mm. And over my life, those two things have been very openly spoken about and kind of just kind of not got out of hand, but just they just became things that didn't matter. If you weren't religious or weren't political, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Or if you went from one side or the other. But this has kind of swung that backwards, and I feel like now it's kind of a conversation. There's a conversation that you don't have with people anymore because you don't want the energies, you know, the negative energy to come around the conversation.
Yeah.
And again, I've got my direct family on both sides, and we all sit at the dinner table and have dinner and have a good time, but we just don't talk about politics. It's weird.
I think the thing is I think there's, like, realistically, yeah, you're right, but we're all allowed our own opinion. And as long as people are allowed to talk their opinion, and you're willing to listen to other people's opinions and potentially be swayed and learn, it's all about education, isn't it? It's all about, oh, I didn't think of it like that, or oh, actually this is, yeah, you're right with that, if you know what I mean, or this is how I feel. Like, there's no right or wrongs in any of this. It's just an interest. I hope that when things kind of go back a little bit, I don't want to say to normal, because I don't know if normality is going to be how we saw it, but I think when people are a little bit more busy and kind of back to work and, like, chill the fuck out a little bit, it's going to be
less anxious.
Yeah, definitely, man, definitely. So you've been hitting me up about coming on here and wanting to talk about this new party in the Gold Coast that you've been running, and I kind of want to hear about it. I've got some friends over there, and they've said that you've been kind of throwing some cool parties. Talk to me.
Yeah, so I mean, I actually tried it. I've been doing it with a friend, Little Fritter, who is meant to be sitting right here, but he didn't finish DJing until midnight last night, and he was like, I'm not fucking getting up at 5 a.m. to come talk. mid-year last year, Australia's cases were really good and all that kind of stuff, and they started slowly letting, you know, people visit you again. And then me and Frida were like, you know, fuck, we need to do something different. We need to, like, no one's allowed to do anything and no one's taking any risks. Why don't we take the risk and why don't we do the thing? So when restrictions came to, like, you're allowed to have 100 people at your house, we found a place and we invited 100 people over and we had a little dance party. And, you know, we did it completely for free. The police and, like, our Queensland health, you know, the state that we live in, the and health officer came down to the party, walked in, shook her hand and said, great job, and left.
Cool.
So, you know, it was all above board. And then we did another one, which was a slightly bigger, when the restrictions got a little bit bigger again, that was free. And then, you know, then they said dancing was allowed, like, it was legal at a public place. So we did a party and we actually, you know, did it for 600 and sold it out within like 16 hours because people just didn't have anything to do. It was like, you know, turned into hard tickets really, really, really quickly.
That's amazing.
We've done a few. They've all sold out. Yeah, it's amazing, man.
I guess it just goes to show that people do just want, like, it's the same in the UK, it's the same in America. The minute a festival goes on for sale, everyone just buys them. And it's like, I think people have realized, like, shit, we've actually not socialized and we've not listened to good music and we've just been kind of, like, deprived of our lives and what a lot of people, like, kind of work for. Like, how many of your mates just, like, work just to go and have a good time on the weekend and escape?
I know. Yeah. Like,
there's so many people that have jobs that they feel like they have to escape themselves on the weekend and just have a good time, and no one's been able to do that.
Yeah. Mad. Yeah. On a, like, I feel like the first party, actually the first party we did was only for 25 people because it was like super, super early COVID vibes. And even though, like, you know, I was, me and Frida were both used to DJing to a lot more people than that, but just having 25 people in one space dancing and having a good time, like drinking and talking. And it was this weird feeling. It was just like, fuck. So I realized that I DJ not so much as a profession, but I actually DJ for fun, to give people fun and to give myself fun. And that was the kind of the first movement in this new direction that, you know, good energy is so much more important than anything else in this industry. There's my alarm to wake up.
Wake up.
That's fucking bad. I think people coming together and having a good time is extremely important for everybody. And maybe we did all take it for granted, or not that we took it for granted, but we didn't realize that was such an important part of our lives. And now it's definitely come through. And I think, you know, every festival selling out, you know, every party selling out, you know, even lower capacity nightclubs are still selling out because people just want to be out there and enjoying themselves.
Yeah, I think it's so important. I don't think we realize how it's, like, literally part of our DNA to socialize and enjoy life. But like from religious ceremonies, and if you know what I mean, from like years and years, like hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, it's like, it's just in our DNA that we need to be around people.
It's a connection that maybe we don't fully understand.
Yeah. And I think maybe we do understand it a little bit more now.
Yeah, for sure. Because we're taking notice.
Yeah, it's that understanding. But I don't know about you, but it is also like kind of like, it's quite exhausting to a certain extent for me. It's like, oh shit, I'm supposed to be going out here tonight, I'm going for dinner here tonight, I'm seeing these people here, seeing those people. And it's like, we've done like nearly a year and 3 months without seeing people, and now all of a sudden it's like you're allowed to see people, which is amazing. But it's like, I wonder how like mentally tiring that's going to be, because realistically no one has a fucking thing to talk about because we've done nothing.
it's true. I mean, I feel like that I still, when I go out, I still get anxious because I just socially get a bit anxious anyway. When I go out to meet a bunch of people I haven't met before.
Why is that?
I think it's just part of my personality. I'm very, you know, outrageous and crazy, you know, when I'm out and having a drink or something like that. But realistically, not many people know about my private life. Mm. I live, you know, I'm a solo producer who lives in a room by himself Monday to Friday, writing music and running a record label. I'm not really an out there, go get them kind of person, meet everybody. So when I find myself in a table full of 8 people, and especially if I'm the DJ and a lot of the conversations are coming towards me, that's not my usual 9 to 5, which straight away, you know, maybe that's why I drink when I go out. I don't know.
I think it's probably 100% why you drink, isn't it? You just got to admit that. It's okay to have that, isn't it? It's fine. So I want to get into this a little bit. Like, what, when you, because I can kind of relate to a certain extent. I just don't drink, but it's when you're having dinner with a bunch of people that you don't know and everything's coming to you, what is the kind of like go-to reaction? Like, what's the go-to response for you?
So, I mean, I feel like I'm super, the reason I find it hard is because I'm a very, very honest person. So if anyone asks me any question about anything, I'm going to give them the long, honest answer. So, I mean, I kind of find myself quickly falling into a situation where I now feel like the promoter or the promoter's friend is more than an acquaintance. So because they know something personal about me. I feel like my first thing is to just keep talking. Keep talking until I'm naturally in a conversation where it's not someone I don't know anymore.
That's cool. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah, that's my kind of way around it. And, you know, and that's the point now where it does, there's another hard part about that is now that, you know, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Twitter, you know, emails, text messages, between all these different platforms of people messaging, like, and I'm not saying that I have lots of friends or anything like that, but it then becomes overwhelming at home trying to keep these relationships moving because, you know, I've made a deeper connection than just a DJ turning up to your city.
No, I feel you with that. It's weird, isn't it? Because it must be the same for them. For let's say, for instance, for promoters on, like, in clubs, like, how many they see 20 DJs every month, and I wouldn't say they're building relationships up with everyone, but let's say, for instance, you're going for like a promoter meal, they bring a couple of their mates, or like it's the whole crew in the club, and then it's like, it is a lot, and I've never really thought about it till you've kind of mentioned that. Are you the type of person that likes to talk about what you do for a living?
Not so much. I mean, if the question comes across, I mean, I'll give them a pretty detailed answer, but I try not to talk too much about music and that kind of thing. I like to ask them questions about, you know, their life and try to get, you know, more involved and understand them as a person. Because, I mean, I do love socializing. It's just, I always find that first hurdle super hard to get across. Mm. But yeah, ask me anything and I'll pretty much answer it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I kind of don't like to talk about myself. And I don't mean that in, like, if you do, it's because you love yourself. It's, I just find it really awkward saying, like, what I do for a living. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
If anyone asks me if I'm a DJ, like, if someone says, you know, what's your name? I will never say Wongo. It's always Matt. Yeah. And, you know, if they say, you know, what do you do for a living? If they don't know that I'm a DJ, I'll say I'm a music producer. Yeah. Because the expectation comes down a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's more so, I hate anyone ever, you know, this is kind of a bad thing. I think there's a type of person who does put themselves in that higher ranking all the time, and they do get more because they kind of make everyone feel like they're owed something. But I don't like anyone feeling like they owe me anything. I like to just be a human on the same wavelength, doing the same things.
Yeah, I usually just say I work in music.
I am doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It's so strange, isn't it? Society and how we all have these things, like whether you're a software engineer, whether you're a music producer, whether you're a binman, whether you're whatever you are, like, we must all have these social insecurities where we're just not too sure what the fuck to say.
Do you think it's
because we're worried about what people are going to say or what people are going to do, or do you think, is it like that judging?
It's some kind of personal ego thing, for sure. I'm not sure where it kind of comes from. But I mean, I just like everyone feeling equal. And
same.
You know, if I say DJ or touring DJ, or, you know, when I used to have a day job, so I worked at a supermarket and I was also a touring DJ. And my wife always brings this up, but whenever I go to a conversation with somebody, I used to tell them that I worked at a supermarket, even though like I was, you know, making most of my profit from being a DJ. But like, she was just like, you're not a fucking supermarket salesman. You're a fucking you're a DJ.
I think also, if I'm honest with you, and this sounds really bad, but I think if I was to say, like, meet someone random and they say, what do you do? And I turn around and was like, I'm a DJ. It automatically sparks another conversation about me.
Yeah.
And
maybe that's a really good point.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about me. So I will kind of downplay everything I do so that I don't have to talk about me, and then it will kind of,
I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think that's why I do it.
Yeah,
for sure. Because it straight away. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's easy, isn't it? It's just easy to go, like, I work in music, and then let's talk about you now. Like, what do you do? Like, where do you come from? And then you can kind of, you know, you're like, for me, I know that I'm trying to steer away from that question. Is like, Oh, what music do you produce, or what, like?
Yeah.
What do you say when someone says, "What music do you produce?"
I can just say 4/4 dance music because 4/4 gives them the rhythm, and dance music gives them the sound. And so, right, you know, if I say house or techno, then they'll be like, "Oh, what's kind of house or techno?" Or they'll be like, "Oh, is that doof doof music?" Or, you know, like just easy 4/4 beat drums, and that's basically, you can figure out the rest yourself.
You can get, yeah, and then just and they just run away and not have to talk to them. But I do love those conversations on planes where you're like, okay, this, when you sit next to someone and you just start having a conversation with them, you meet the most random people, and it's like, I would never have ever, like, our paths would never have kind of crossed unless we were on a plane. Yeah. Because you can sit next to this, like, crazy business people or just like super interesting people. I absolutely love it. How do you find the room? Go on.
I was going to say, so you are a passenger speaking to kind of passenger yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
It depends how I feel. If I've not really slept. I'm kind of like the person that I'll always say hi to someone, and I'll like,
for sure,
if someone's like walking past me, I'll always smile at them and I'll always say hi. And if they're like, if we're on a, let's say on a plane and somebody kind of sits next to me, I'm like, hey, how's it going? And then kind of sometimes I regret that because I'm like, fuck, I shouldn't have said hi because now they're just going to try and talk to me the whole time. But I think we're both nice people. You have to kind of be nice and kind of be respectful. And
I accidentally walked, like, I had this agent maybe like 8 years ago, and he just dropped me one day, never emailed me, stopped getting me gigs, just like fully just cold dropped me. And it was the weirdest thing ever. And
who was this? We need to name and shame that person.
It's Sydney that's not very liked.
Okay.
So I just completely cut ties, which is very weird for me because I like to keep relationships going for everything I do. But we completely just cold cut from each other. One day I was walking down the street and he was across the other street, and naturally I was like excited to see him. So I waved at him, smiling, and I said, hey. And he purposely looked away and kept walking. And it was the moment for me where I was like, holy fuck. I didn't, you know how you say hello before you even realize who it is, because that's the polite thing to do.
Yeah.
So like I'd already been nice and waved and everything, and he still was a cop to me. And I was just like, oh, well, you know, it just goes to show that my natural reaction was to still bring him in, and his natural reaction was to kick me out.
I think was he an American agent or Australian?
Australian, which I felt like was pretty weird.
Yes, he's just a dick.
He's a dick. He's a proper dick. And since then, a lot of people I know also think he's a dick. But like, yeah, just to cold cut me like that, I was just, you know, twice really. Like he dogged me twice.
Yeah, they're just not very nice people. That's just not a nice person, isn't it? Like, business is business, and a relationship outside of business is completely different to business. And especially being an agent or being in the music industry, you have to learn, like, we work in a social industry. So whether that business doesn't work for you, you don't have to cut your, like, personal relationship away from that.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm very good at keeping personal and business separate. So that was another reason. So I've been managing myself for 5 years now. Mm. But the previous 5 years, I had a manager, and we were best friends before he became my manager.
Yeah.
And over the 5 years, we just kind of grew apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's because I am a cunt to work with. I am picky and all that kind of stuff. But he slowly separated me from him because he felt like our friendship kept deteriorating. And, you know, for me, when I was with him in person, we never spoke about music, because that for me was us keeping our friendship and keeping, you know, what was good beforehand alive. But what was really going on is inside his self was every time we met, he couldn't let go of the anxiety of
manager,
the stuff that I spoke about last week, you know, and things like that. And it kind of just fizzled out and disappeared, which was sad because he was my best friend beforehand.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? When it's like that, it's just a bit, it's true that a lot of businesses just can't work with friendships. Where the minute you bring money into like a friendship, whether that's a business or whether that's anything, it's does get a bit touchy, which is sad.
Yeah, I know.
Because it is finances. It's like I'd love to be able to employ like a lot of my friends. Like that's one of my goals one day, to be able to like give my, just because I believe in my mates to be successful. And I would love that. But then the other side of it is like I don't want necessarily to be their boss, because I think that just that just kind of creates a horrible like dynamic between two people.
So the only person that so far it's really worked with is Jess, my wife. So somehow when you found love, like true love, you can't piss each other off, you know, and too much. So
you've got partners listening to this and going, no, my girlfriend or my boyfriend fucking pisses me off so much. Could kill them.
I'm sure I piss her off. But like, so she helps me with, you know, everything, you know, everything. And you know, when I'm being a cunt, when I'm like, oh, I need this. She has the emotional capacity to tell me, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Where if it's someone that works for you, they're probably not going to tell you to shut the fuck up. You know, unless you have a, you know, really good manager or a manager that feels like they're your boss, or, you know, there's, you know, lots of different dynamics. But so far, you know, over the last 5 years, Jess has been able to be my wife and my business partner without it hurting our relationship. And maybe that's rare. Maybe I'm super, super lucky. I don't know. But, I mean, Carl Watson does the same thing. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, that dynamic is there, you know, for people.
I think what it is that's amazing, first of all. But I also think what it is that you're going for the same goals, right? You both want the same out of it for both of you. I know with my manager, like I've gone through some shit managers in the past, but realistically, like with self-reflection, it was my fault for being in those relationships, and it was my fault for allowing those relationships to carry on. It's just like anything, it's just like anything when you got a girlfriend or a boyfriend and it just drags out for far too long. It's your fault for dragging that out for too long. It's all of our faults. My current manager, Ryan, we have this relationship where he would tell me to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
But
it's good.
Yeah, it's great. And he will challenge me and I'll also challenge him. And
yeah.
I can literally hands down say I've never been annoyed with him. I've never been like this fucking dickhead. Like it's just never. And I think that's because we're so honest with each other. And I think that comes back to what we were saying right at the beginning is communication.
Yeah.
Like just being honest and communicating correctly.
Yeah.
Because.
For sure, in any relationship.
Yeah, and I think because realistically, like let's say for instance, you and your wife, right? You're only together because you've communicated so well over however long you've been together. Because if you pissed her off or she pissed you off and you didn't tell her, she's just going to carry on doing that because she won't know that it pisses you off. It's just that simple thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but for sure.
For some reason, as human beings, we struggle with it so much, and I don't know why.
Well, it's like ego. Like, I mean, especially if you don't fully want to change or like do things differently for somebody else, then you shouldn't do it. Yeah. You know, that's when bad relationships get created, and, you know, you might end up being in somewhere for 3 years and then realize it was, you know, all your fault for sticking in there when you knew it was something that wasn't natural. But you have to, you know, in anything, you need to leave wiggle room either side to, for you both to feel something, you know, be on the same wavelength.
Yeah. Compromise.
Compromise all the time.
Compromise. It's shit, isn't it? Fucking hate compromising.
You know, I drove to this Bushdorf on the weekend, and me and a friend who we've hung out a few times, but we don't know each other all that well. We had like a deep chat like this, completely sober on the whole way there as well. And I find it funny. I probably know you about the same amount, and it's this is exactly what I'm talking about. How like the more personal and honest and deep you get with somebody, the deeper the connection will become, and then, you know, we're not just acquaintances anymore. You know, now when I see you, I'll be even less awkward, you know, socially awkward, and it'll help, you know, moving forward to always to be more myself.
I think this is why I do this conversation. I do this podcast, if I'm honest with you, is selfishly for me to kind of build relationships with people that I either know really well or don't know that well, or just super interested in what they're up to. It's like, cause I remember the first time we met in Gold Coast. And then the last time we met, if you know what I mean, when we kind of all were like just hanging out by the side of the beach, and the last time we met, it was just like, it was in the day, we were all chilling, like me, Teagues, you and your wife. And like, it was just like super chill and normal. And I don't, this like kind of, we could have a good conversation where we've never had that before. And I think it's just like communication is so key, but you need that first bit of communication where you're like, yeah, we get on pretty well when we're having conversations, but there's just not enough of that, I don't think, in this industry, in our industry.
You don't usually get time to do it.
Yeah, and it's not a bad thing that, like, we're all busy people. We've all got shit going on, and we've all got lives outside of our work, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, and I want people to have lives, but what I really want to do with this podcast is allow other people to hear these conversations, because I think it's so healthy to have a long form conversation.
For sure. Have you done anyone on the podcast who you haven't known whatsoever, and you've really struggled to have a connection with?
No.
You find like you. Yeah, that's good.
I try to bring, in fact, that I've had two people on that I had never met in my life. Like, I had a girl called Kat. That's really bad that I've forgotten her surname, but she's like a food writer. And she was amazing. I came across her on YouTube. I was really into what she kind of did, and followed her on Instagram, and like, I love food, so we just literally spoke about food for about an hour, and it was just like good fun. And another guy was a guy called Jake Hanrahan, who's like a conflict journalist, and I was just like super into what he did. Like, I was really into how he kind of was a journalist on situations that we don't hear about in the world, and that we should hear about, and the fact that the mainstream media just don't really give a fuck about what is actually happening. They're just worried about like what like people are going to click on, really. And we had like really really deep conversations with people that I've never met, and honestly, like, I speak to these people, but am I going to meet them again? I don't know, if you know what I mean. But that conversation is always going to be there for people to listen to. And it's that kind of connection that I just want people to understand, that like, talking is so important.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like when you're flying into a city and you see like, you know, at nighttime, and you see all the lights on in every single house, and like how many people live in each other in each house, and how many interesting stories each person has. Yeah. And like, really, I like, when I look at the lights, I just think it's like this big, you know, energy of like this different lives and different things that people have experienced, and good things and bad things and great things and terrible things. And like, constantly, it's like, that's the only thing I think about when I'm flying into a city, is how much how many interesting things are happening right underneath my feet as I'm flying in that I'll never, ever, ever know about. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's mad, isn't it? Because we live in this world that's so small. Like I was in Brighton the other day seeing one of my best friends and also doing some studio work, and walking down the street was one of my ex-girlfriends from school, so like from like fucking years ago, her little sister who I haven't seen in like, well, she's an adult now and she was definitely not an adult. She was like 5 years old last time I saw her, and you're just like, shit, like this world is so small. Like how is it that we are on the same street out of 68 million people in the UK?
Yeah.
We're on the same street at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
It's so mad. And then, yeah, you're right. Everyone that you walk past has their own life story and has their own experiences. And I think it's just about learning from people.
Like knowledge is power, but it doesn't have to be something like knowledge of like, does the power, knowledge doesn't have to be powerful itself, but just powerful to you.
Yeah.
You know, just knowing, understanding it, humans, which goes back to the letting people do their thing, you know, let people react the way they want to react, because that's, you can learn from that.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
I know this is kind of political, like it's a political thing, but like people tearing down statues just in general, you know, whether they're good things or bad things, or that people did bad things. Once you start erasing history or erasing things that have happened in the past, how can we properly learn from them? Because, you know, in 100 years time, people won't know the truth. You know, people won't know how bad things were. So things could travel back in the wrong direction, where we've got these literal pillars telling us, don't do that again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And you know, I know there's a lot of good things coming from for now for people pulling down statues, but I feel like, I just don't want the world to ever forget how bad things once were.
Yeah, man,
like, I find that scary.
I totally agree. I think if we could all agree that we actually live in the best time ever.
We do.
Like, and I'm not saying it's perfect. Yeah, I'm not saying it's perfect, and I'm not saying there isn't room for improvement. However, utopia does not exist, and we don't want to fucking live in utopia, because that's not that's not right. There's been like in the UK, there's been like a few riots, like locally in Bristol, based on some like political kind of bill passing or something like that. And it's just wild. I think people forget that other people are humans. And one of my like real good friends is in the police force here. And he's like in the riot police, and it has to go to these riots and kind of look after property and kind of arrest people for being abusive and being not very nice to other people or to them, the police. And I think with mainstream media, and I'm not saying all police are like this, I know there's like a big thing on police at this moment in time, but
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The people rioting taking out their anger on people that are just doing their job.
Yeah.
And you're like, where's the kind of the lack of compassion to other human beings? Yeah. Like that, you're going to throw a rock at someone that you don't know, that's done nothing, that's done nothing to you, but purely because you don't like
to work.
Yeah, they're literally just doing what they do, and they have to pay, they have to work because they've got to pay their mortgage. They've got a wife and kids at home, or a husband and kids at home. They've got a mum, they've got a dad, they've got brothers and sisters. And what gives you the right to kind of do that to somebody? And that goes vice versa. That's both ways. It's police officers kind of taking, oh, are you still there?
Yeah.
It's police officers.
Yeah.
And I think realistically, again, it just goes back to compassion and just like going, oh, actually, that is another human being. You don't know what they've been through. Like, we don't know how do we
stand together? Like, is there some kind of new type of protest where the actual police are involved with the protest, and it's the police on the same side as the people? You know, I don't know what that means, you know, because obviously, you know, the police are there to protect, you know, property and things like that, like you say. But is there some kind of, I don't know,
well, I think
thing to change with?
I think the thing, I think the difference is that protesting is fine, but rioting is not fine.
For sure.
Simple. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, is I think if we're all pretty, if we all sit back and go, we all kind of have the same view. We all kind of want the same thing. Most people, we all want to be able to work.
Yeah.
We all want our families to be fit and healthy. We want health to be healthy, and we want to have food on the table. Realistically, if we split everything back to that, and we want to be able to be free and do our own things, most people want that.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a very small minority that kind of always fuck it up for the rest.
Yeah. And that's what the media always is pushing, because that's what's getting clicks, because it's not normal.
Yeah.
And which gives a very misconstrued version of what the world is really like.
Yeah, 100%. Because walking down the street, people are cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Even like through the last 6 months, most of the people I've met, like new people that I've met, still actually have very, very similar views to what I do.
Yeah.
And which always makes me feel like, oh, maybe there is more middle people. Maybe there, you know, than I really thought there was. And there really is. I think that, like you're saying, when you hope things kind of start moving in a more positive direction, I think that's already at least happening in Australia.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because we've kind of been out of COVID for a little while now, and the news isn't really talking about it as much. Maybe I definitely do feel a wave of like good energy and good aspirations from people coming through. Like it's here.
Yeah, I think people are just fed up, aren't they, as well, of just being around negative attitudes on what it's just. You're forcing people into a crazy mental health kind of situation.
People are done.
Yeah, where you're telling people it's just scaremongering, and there's no one that's like, there are a lot of people actually, but the majority of people listen to mainstream news and mainstream media, and like the amount of, but realistically, it's the minorities that are louder than the majorities. It's the far left, the far right are always louder than the majority, because the majorities have just got better things to worry about.
Yeah, well, they're extremists, not in a way of saying they're terrorists, but they're extremists in their views. So naturally, extremists are always going to be louder.
Yeah, fuckers, motherfuckers.
So let's on another note, what's your lifestyle right now for you? What's your day to day kind of Will Clark?
So for me, it depends. During most of COVID, it was like wake up, train, studio, go for a walk in the hills, just like cook for my family every night and kind of just crack on with that. My parents own a drug and alcohol rehab, so I've been helping them out with usually a client. When a new client would come into the rehab, they would just like get a train down or someone would drive them down. But because of COVID, we have to like test them and do all of that. Yeah. So I've been just helping them out and going to pick clients up and testing them and then dropping them back in the rehab. So I've been helping them out, which has been nice to kind of just get out of my head a little bit and just get on the road and just do some driving and listen to some books and shit like that. I've been baking a shit ton. I've been like learning how to bake and cooking a load. But that's it. I'm ready to get back into it though. I'm really ready. What about you?
Yeah.
What about you?
I mean, now, yeah, I mean, if I don't go to the gym, I Jess and I go for like a long beach walk or something with Mia and like make the most of it. But honestly, it's like sitting in here, writing music for 30 minutes, 25 minutes, walking out there, seeing how Mia is, walking back in for you for another 25 minutes. It's like, although I can stay in here for, you know, 8 hours and while Jess is looking after Mia, I kind of want to be out there and experiencing these first few months of her life.
Totally.
So, I mean, I'm very torn and, you know, I'm only like working at like 80% in the studio, you know, or in business, trying to leave that other 20% just to be fully in her life. So, I mean, that's literally my last 12 months is, or like at least last 6 months or even 12 months, because while Jess was pregnant, because, you know, being there for Jess was also really important to me.
Yeah. Totally.
While she was, you know, going through pregnancy, which is a whole other thing as well.
Yeah, women are special people, man. Could you imagine doing that? Women are special people. Could you imagine being pregnant?
It's gnarly. So she went from pregnancy, which was she did have an easy pregnancy, like compared to a lot of other people I know, but you know, but it's not easy. And then she went into having a C-section, and then she went into having, you know, trouble breastfeeding, and then, but you know, going through all these things, and then, you know, that's no sleep as well. Like there's all these things that just like keep stacking and stacking and stacking and stacking, and it would break any man.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, obviously they start to come back off again as the as a woman, you know, as life gets a little bit easier, but like they still, like, that should surely is going to be the hardest thing they ever have to do. I would like to believe.
And they still have
because fucking hell.
And they still have to put up with our shit every day as well.
Yeah, and then it's me saying, "Oh, does this email fucking read right? Like, am I being too pushy?" You know, I had to write this big long email to the police last week, and it was pretty much politely telling them we don't want them at our event. You know, not because we don't like police presence; like they're going to be there anyway.
Yeah,
but they wanted to be there. Because they feel like our events are high risk because of the types of people that come to it and things like that. But I had to politely say, look, we love you guys and you guys do really well for us, but we just, this party needs to, people need to feel like they can breathe and be free.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have a presence, make sure people are safe, you know, make sure we're doing our job properly, but then, you know, leave them go again so they can do their thing, you know, just, you know, not having to feel like someone's watching them.
Yeah.
I wrote a really hectic email, and Jess had to come in and like reword the entire thing.
Yeah, that's good having a buffer though, because otherwise you can just fuck yourself sometimes.
Well, I mean, we've got security. That's why we hire security, and we've got medics on site and things like that. We've got things in place to mitigate risk, and they'll, you know, they just feel like that they would like to mitigate it further, and we just said, you know, politely, no.
Do they have power to close parties down?
Sure. If we were super unsafe, we've got like, you know, we've got plans in place for everything. We've got like, I think there's a higher chance of like liquor licensing closing you down due to social distancing. So we have to, like, the event space is twice the size that it would usually be for the amount of people and things like that. So we've tried to put everything in place where nothing nothing can get us shut down, you know, as long as me and little Fritter aren't being idiots on the day and being unsafe, which we're not. We're like, you know, these are the only parties where I kind of don't drink, you know. I might drink right at the very end, but I, people's safety is just far more important than me having my own personal good time.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's a business for you now, and it's you're actually the other side of it. You're not just the DJ, you're also the promoter, and you've got other people's lives under your name, really.
I mean, and so like exactly. So if I feel like if anything was really bad, was it really to ever happen, you know, touch wood, that doesn't happen. But it's, you know, it's all my Wongo personal name that kind of gets hurt as well. So I mean, it's there's a lot to just try and make sure that it's always 110% professional and amazing and fun to, you know, keep both my careers going.
Yeah, I really respect that, man, because it's, you're pushing stuff ahead in a time where people are scared to do shit. And
yeah, I'm not getting many bookings, you know what I mean? So it's do it yourself.
You have to, man. And that's the whole point of being in a niche market, right? You have to I hate using the word, but it's that hustle word. You just have to fucking work. No one's going to give it to you on a plate. No one's going to no one's going to wake up and go, oh, I haven't booked Wongo in a while, or, oh, I haven't booked Will Clark in a while. Let me book them, or let me start a party just to help them out. Like, no one thinks that, and I don't want anyone to think that. It's up to us to kind of push forward as artists and creators to kind of do that for ourselves.
Yeah. Well, at Rabbit's Eat Lettuce on the weekend, I said to my friend who was with me, I said, although I know I deserve this, I said, I'm blessed. Yeah. Like, I'm very, very blessed to be able to do this, you know? And he's like, yeah, but you worked hard for it. And I was like, yeah, I know. But at the same time, being rewarded for your hard work is hard to get. It's hard to actually feel like the rewards ever justify how hard you work. Cause I mean, from obviously 5 o'clock in the morning till 6 p.m. at night to tonight, I'm going to be working. Whether or not, you know, I'm not going to be DJing, so no one's going to be able to give me gratification. But I'll literally be working all day, you know, 12 hours today and 12 hours tomorrow and 12 hours next day to get the opportunity to DJ on an amazing stage for an amazing amount of people. You know, it's you just got to keep hustling, and hustle. I think hustle is just a bad word in general, just because it makes it sound like you're taking something from somebody else, even though you kind of are. but like, you know, the hustle means that you like to work at 110%, you know, and a lot of people just like to work at 90 or 100. Mm. And so that's an extra 10%, you know, that makes you a hustler, but really you're just a hard worker.
Yeah, hard work is something that it's so easy to say, you've just got to work hard. And so many people just don't fucking understand it. Don't understand what hard work is. It's the same in fitness, in anything. If you want to get somewhere, you have to work. I don't know how many people you kind of get asked every day, like, how do you get to where you're at? And it's like, practice. But how do you get good at practicing? You have to just put the work in. It's consistent.
I don't know when the moment was when it went from a hobby to a job, but it was obviously, it was a long, long time ago. But I mean, I feel like the hobby took over my life. So I ended up just, you know, I was doing my hobby for 3 hours a day, then I was doing my hobby for 8 hours a day. Then, you know, and even up until maybe until, you know, you can start branching out, that the old thing that you were doing then becomes the job because you're doing something you're also passionate about, you know, like with Boxer Cats. So I started doing Boxer Cats and that's where all my energy went. So then Wongo kind of hit a standstill and that became my bread and butter. And then Boxer Cats starts building. And so, you know, now Boxer Cats is a good place. And now I'm like, all right, so let's start Need to Freak. And then, so Need to Freak is now kind of my passion project. So these both feel like jobs. And then, you know, but then once that kind of gets to a point, maybe there's going to be something else that I want to do that will become my passion project, and Need to Freak will feel like a job. So, you know, it's, you know, it's like, you know, people get new jobs in different industries all the time, you know, because they're sick of their job or they hate their boss or anything like that. But I haven't got the situation where I can do that. So, and I know music, so I'm just going to continue to find new avenues inside music to feed that same feeling.
I was going to say that. Do you ever get to the point where you're like, I'm actually fed up with not having a passion or not having a hobby that is purely just a hobby? Because the thing that I have is that I enjoy doing things, and then I automatically try and turn it into a business. And because
I can't help that.
What's that about?
I think it's driven by money, and it's not that I'm not a money person. Like, I don't care if I don't have anything. But I think that when I have a hobby, it's because I like it. It's a good, and then there's a part of me that thinks, okay, well, if it's a hobby, it's probably a good idea. If I'm not the only person into it, there's probably money in it. And so like I think about how you can turn that into a business, and and same with Jess. So Jess and I, that's part of our dynamic, is I'm really good at thinking of new things, and she's really good at figuring out what that means to become a job or a business. And so, and naturally that we just bounce off each other until it becomes a new business venture.
Yeah.
Can't help it. It's just part of the back of my brain is to how to make money out of things. The money doesn't have to be for me, but it's like turn into something that makes money.
I feel that. I'm pretty similar in that. And it's like, so it does frustrate me sometimes. Like, I'm doing it at the moment with, like, I'm baking at the moment a lot. And I was like, okay, I could buy a proper bread oven. And then I'm like, oh, yeah. That means that I then have to start baking more bread. And that means that I'm going to have to start selling it. And then I'm like, I don't want to be a baker. I just, like, stop it, Will. Just, like, accept that you can.
Maybe that's. I'm thinking maybe because it's a hobby outside of music that you have some sort of limit of control, because, you know, I can't become a baker because then I'm going to have to be less of a DJ and then I'm going to have to open a bakery. Then I'm going to have to open two bakeries. You
exactly.
know,
like,
you can only do one full on all the way. I don't have a hobby that is not in music. I always find hobbies within music. Like, like you doing this podcast, that's another kind of hobby for you. It would have been, you know, something fun for you to do.
Definitely. This is definitely a hobby in music. That
maybe me, maybe my daughter's my hobby. You know, and that sounds terrible.
No, it doesn't. Makes sense.
But like, she, all my spare time used to go to video games or, you know, whatever. But now all my spare time goes into her.
That makes sense.
And so I think that's my hobby.
Yeah. How did Boxer Cat start?
So we were all releasing on a label called Jack Union back in like 2005, 2006. And that was by a guy called Hijack from Bournemouth.
Okay.
And he kind of just stopped doing music, left the music industry, the label finished, and we all kind of just went our separate ways and we're doing our things for a few years. And then, Jack Z, who was a producer from London, he just put us all on a random Facebook message once and said, like, I really think that the music that we like is unrepresented. Like, it's no one's doing it. Why don't we start a label together? And again, fucking getting me involved was a bad idea because I turn everything into a business. You know, we were just like a free label that just released music for free on SoundCloud. And that was kind of the idea, was to help people and just create a platform for younger artists to get music out, you know, with Kyle Watson's weight behind it, out to larger DJs. Then I think 6 months down the track, you know, we're getting so much, you know, plays and stuff on SoundCloud. We're like, let's turn it into a label. And I kind of just kept getting more and more involved until now this room is kind of HQ, and I've got a paid intern that comes in once a week and helps us with demos and, you know, does all that, like organizes all like our assets and things like that. So
that's awesome.
But yeah, just a really slow progression into something that's now, you know, doing its own thing, kind of, you know, kind of.
How many releases have you done?
Over 100, 120.
That's great.
Over six and a half years or 7 years.
That's great.
Yes. It's amazing. Yes. So we I would like to release less, but I feel like it's part of my duty to represent music that's, you know, from more unknown artists, because that's kind of why we created the label. I never wanted it to get to the point where we're just signing, you know, the bigger artists for each release. We wanted to kind of keep it on a level that was, you know, Dirty Bird was the next step up, and they could kind of use us as a platform to move forward, which is kind of why we're thinking about doing a sister label that can will either be above that or even below that again, and you know, just keep being able to push more and more music. And, you know,
how important is like a record label owner is like catalog? And I mean, like, for people that aren't listening, I mean, catalog, there's a lot of record labels that release a lot of music because that's the only way to earn money in the music industry. And as a record label is to just constantly have a release. Like, let's say for instance, like the big guys like Tool Room, Defected, Solar.
Are they every week?
I think so.
Yeah, that's pretty gnarly. So doing every 2 weeks is almost too much work. I mean, for the size that we are, but once a week is even crazy. But like looking at our figures, if we would release one a week, I know that it could really be a proper money earner.
Yeah.
But that's kind of not the purpose behind it. See, there is a limit. I say there is a limit where I say, okay, this is the business, and then I'm going to cut that off and work somewhere else.
Yeah.
So maybe Box of Cats is my baking bread and I don't want to buy an oven.
No, man, I respect that because it's still keeping that level of what you want in the passion there. Yeah. If you know what I mean? It's not
going... Yeah, we want to keep it real.
Yeah, it's not going full hog and going like, this is how we do it. And it's nice that you kind of stuck as just a label for the time being, because I think it's very easy to go label events, festivals, and then what happens is you actually just turn into an events company rather than an actual record label, and then the music goes down and the music is like secondary to everything else, which we all know record labels that have done that, and it's actually shown because the music goes down massively, and then people actually are like, wait, what am I listening to? Like the record label that we all loved, kind of, it happens a lot in record labels. And
I feel like it was still probably, it's their new minority that are into the music, you know, once you go into like that lifestyle, you know, when your record label becomes a lifestyle rather than it does a record label. You know, most of the people are into it because of the lifestyle, not because of the music.
Yeah.
I mean, it is sad because, you know, the music does degrade, but at the same time, they're running a business. Do you know what I mean? You know, once you start hiring people, I think that's probably, you know, something that makes it hard is once you start hiring people and having to pay people, you feel obligated to keep them in a job, you know, not just to say, okay, look, you know, we've made enough money now, but we'll let you go because we want to concentrate on music again.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to keep it going. But yeah,
I think that's the thing though, isn't it? It's working out what are you doing it for and what do you want to get out of it? Because if that is just to keep people in jobs, but you lose quality, it's like clothing, right? You have that like really cool clothing company that then, or restaurant, a really cool restaurant that then gets bought out by a big company and then it gets turned into a chain and then the restaurant's shit because they have to go like, they have to reduce food qualities and they have to do all of that and employ more people and take on more rent and things like that. It's that balance. Where can we like, okay, we're not going to have a chain.
Be happy.
Yeah. Like we're not going to have a chain, but we're going to have like 10 restaurants around wherever and we're going to keep them all ourselves. But then it turns into do we get greedy and do we like, oh, we like having 10, we need 100.
Greed is probably a big part of it. Yeah. Well, even like, I mean, all humans are greedy, but are you able to stop yourself from being greedy?
Yeah.
And with Box of Cats, because there's so many involved, I feel like unless we were all like, let's go to another level, Like I don't have the energy to do that on my own, or Kyle doesn't have it. So I mean, it does help keep things back down a little bit. I think everyone having their own careers outside of the label itself.
How many people are actually involved in Boxer Cats then?
There's six of us like own the label. So it's good. Like if we would ever to stop part ways, we would just split everything six ways. But then, so Jess, my wife, does all the merch and she does all the ordering and the posting and everything like that. We've got Trend, who does our demos and works with me once a week. But then there's, so Kyle Watson, Jeff DeBleur, Tommy Q, which is from, I think, somewhere near your way.
Okay.
Mark Spence from Birmingham.
Oh, is Mark involved? I didn't know Mark was involved.
Yeah. So Mark was the only one who wasn't releasing with us back in like 05, 06. But he, I think it was before Nasty came out, he had like a big record on This Ain't Bristol. Before that record came out, we heard his records and we're like, fuck, we just want you to be involved. We think you've got like the right idea and attitude. He's kind of, we all float together. None of us really have a job title except for me. And we all just kind of just enjoy it. And if there's a big business decision that needs to be made, we all have to be unanimous. But besides that, it's pretty chill now.
That's cool, man. I like that because everyone's just doing their own thing. And are you the boss? Are you the big man?
I'm just daddy. I can't help that. I don't think I'm a control freak, but maybe I'm a control freak.
Yeah.
Maybe I just like to have control of things. Even though I like everyone's opinions, I still like to be the one implementing things.
I feel
just
that.
My personality.
I like that. I'm pretty similar where it comes to, I like to know that things are going to get done correctly.
Yeah,
and
which it's fucked and it's hard. It makes things hard.
Because everything always falls on you at the end of the day, right?
But that's why I do it. I don't want to blame anyone for anything. If anything doesn't happen correctly, I have to blame myself. And same. If I can't do that, that was how I was talking about me and my manager falling out years ago. That was what it came down to, was that I couldn't blame myself for things. I kept blaming him.
Yeah.
And that was because I had a manager.
It's that extreme ownership. It's that extreme ownership, isn't it? It's being able to go, actually, no, this is my fault.
Yeah.
And when you take out all kind of like positions above you, it's purely only you that can fuck it up, no matter how many people are there.
I signed an album deal 2 years ago and I was meant to do an album last year. And, so I worked, stupid amount of hours. And so this is an extra year because I kind of forget that 2020 happened. And so the album was meant to come out, but it never did because the label stopped it. It was like deliver masters next month. And they were like, no, you don't have to deliver masters. There's no album happening anymore. And for me, that was my balls being chopped off, and I then didn't have any control whatsoever. And I kind of went into this whirlwind of like anger because they are in control, but that's kind of, I signed a contract that says that they're in control.
Yeah.
But at the same time, after this, I can't imagine myself signing an album deal unless I had 100% control, which is just not going to happen.
Yeah, well, you run a record label and you know how record labels work. And that's it, isn't it? At the end of the day, if the record label doesn't like the record, it's not going out, is it?
Yeah, exactly. So, which makes me think maybe I could have done it, maybe I should have done that idea on Boxer Cats.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't a Boxer Cats idea, which is why I was sending it elsewhere. But at the same time, maybe I could have been, moved the gates of Boxer Cats a little bit more to make way for my own creativity, which people would have accepted because I'm running the label.
Yeah.
But totally. I just, at the time, I didn't feel like that was really an option.
Yeah. That makes sense. Do you still want to do an album?
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I feel like I've got a bunch of song ideas that I've kind of written and just not worked on because I'm just emotionally not ready to start finishing an album again. But yeah, I'll definitely do it one day. It's like, I think that's just like, I only, if I do it once and it fails, awesome. If I do it once and it succeeds, double awesome.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of how I see it. I know writing albums is kind of like throwing records away. It's like a bad business decision. But at the same time, for me personally, as for my career, it's something that I want to do.
It's I totally get that. And it's weird that writing albums in dance music especially is very... It's kind of frowned upon, especially in the streaming world, because you're fucking yourself massively.
Yeah. But that's why you don't write singles. You're trying to make the album not singles. Mm. You know, if you write nothing but singles, sure, then like put them out as singles. But like the album I wrote was, you know, all different BPMs and all different sounds and things that, you know, I can't play in DJ sets, some that I can. You know, it was purposely an expression of my life on a piece of paper or on a computer that would be solidified on, you know, on the internet for the rest of my life.
I think that's it, isn't it? It's also that kind of
legacy,
turning into like a, it's turning into a, from a single artist to an album artist. Justin Martin did it so well. And to the point where he barely has to release any music apart from his album every 2 years, if you know what I mean. Maybe even longer, every 3 years, sometimes every 6 years. It's just, it does change things to your perception.
If you can pull it off.
Yeah, if you can do well. No one wants to hear an album of 10 bangers.
Yeah, which is not what I want to do, but that's kind of what the label wanted. And then they, but when you have a label, an album of 10 bangers, then it is stupid to release them all at the same time, because then you are wasting good revenue and good records on just being up there. Which is, you know, I guess their idea of a Wongo album and my idea of a Wongo album, it should have been written on paper, you know, rather than it being something that was an emotional thing.
Yeah, totally. I think it's also about their perception of who you are as an artist compared to what you want to perceive, what you want people to perceive you as an artist as well. It's always very different.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that, like for me, it's like that ego side of thing is like, I want people to perceive me as a very different artist to what people perceive me as. But at the end of the day, I have to sometimes accept that they're people that like me and they're people that turn up and buy my tickets, whether they put me in whatever camp they want to put me in, is, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. But I mean, I like to believe that my main listeners, the people who really do love me as an artist, when I do something that's a little bit left of the nightclub, then they accept it.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I still have people, you know, and I mean, people, and it brings in new fans that may not have listen to my other music and that, you know, either like it or hate it or whatever. But I feel like I have a broad audience, at least on the Gold Coast, where it's between people who listen to like crossover radio stuff and people that like to me to play fucking, you know, Plastic Man at the end of my set.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I do kind of get both ends, you know, when I'm lucky enough to.
Nah, man, I think it's important. I don't know if you've ever noticed as well, like over the years as you've kind of gotten older in the industry, is like the younger kind of fans and followers and listeners kind of come through, because I don't fully know how long you've been doing it, but I've noticed it in my career, is that you, like, I'm 30 years old, and when I was touring full time at like 24 25, like people were kind of similar around my age, and now they're getting younger and I'm getting older. And how do you find that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm far more disconnected emotionally to them in this space, and like, which is kind of weird. But because I do portray a party boy, crazy person when I'm DJing, most of the time, at least while I'm DJing, I do take on that personality, and people are fucking telling me to take my shirt off, and I take my shirt off. Like at Rabbit's Eat Lettuce on the weekend, I pulled my pants down and mooned everybody at the end of my set. Like, I mean, I naturally do these really stupid things, and it's like, I don't think to do them. It's like, it's still all ad hoc, but I do have a stage presence that meets them halfway, and then when I go back behind stage again, I become my insecure little self, and I walk away.
That's interesting. Yeah, so do you? This might sound really weird, but are you like one go on stage and Matt when you're off stage?
For sure, 100%, 100%. I mean, even to the point where when I'm in the crowd afterwards or before my sets and just having a dance, I'm very, very still. Like I'm taking in the music, I'm taking in the energies, but I'm not there dancing, having a crazy good time because that's not who I am. But when I'm on stage, I'm, you know, pouring a beer on my head or something, you know. I'm very different, which can be confusing for some people who think I'm some person. And when I go out to the crowd and they're like, fucking here, take this pill or do this and do this, and I'm just like, no, I'm okay. Like it does, then they think, oh, but why is he saying no? Because that's not who he is. Yeah. And I'm like, well, yes it is, that is who I am.
Just bipolar, mate. You're just bipolar.
Well, even how many? Yeah, maybe. I'll pull it for an hour and a half once a week.
No, I think it's nice that you can do that and kind of have that. I think a lot of performers do have a stage presence that's not them. To a certain extent.
Isn't that weird though? Isn't that weird that I became professional, and you know, I didn't do any of this on purpose. It was just naturally what I did, and then as I got bigger, the divide just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. You know,
what in age?
Age and in like, I mean, more so like my stage presence and my real self.
Yeah,
get you know further apart. But I think that's also. Yeah, but that is age, you know, me prioritizing different things. When I'm finished on the stage, I'm more thinking, okay, so what can I do now before I need to go to bed so I can drive home in the morning? Before it was like, I don't care if I hear for an extra 2 days by mistake.
Yeah, I think that's the difference, isn't it? Is you've got other responsibilities in life that are actually a lot more important than anything else, like having a kid, having a wife. Like at the end of the day, as much as it would suck if DJing or your child was ever like, I have to do one or the other, you're going to choose your child. Simple.
Yeah. I feel like a few years ago, I said to Jess, I said, I know you would never make me choose music or life because she's a great person. But I said, if I ever had to, I would choose you. And that's not because I dislike music at all, but that's just naturally what's important in life.
That's amazing, man. I can quite happily say I don't think I've never had that in my life yet.
Yeah.
Where I have met somebody that I'm like, yeah, you're it.
And you're bigger than what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think I may have, but I haven't allowed myself to feel that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I mean, we've been together for 11 years now. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like it was probably definitely a gradual thing where I just slowly felt like, you know, that she is my life and music is my job. But, you know, yeah, I know I'm lucky. I'm very, very lucky to have a wife that lets me go and get loose for a night out in the bush 3 hours away and not have no reception, not tell her I'm safe, you know. And then in the morning I'm like, well, I survived. She's like, good job.
Good job. Thank you for surviving. Mate, that is a perfect thing to end this. We've just done an hour and a half and I've really enjoyed this conversation, man. I really appreciate you coming on. Before we end, let's do the promo bit. How can people follow you? How can people come to your parties if they're in Australia? Give us all the lowdown.
Yeah. So if you want to come to our parties, text us at 0404-436-038. So we do all our tickets through a phone number. We don't sell them publicly. So it's all private and, you know, secret. But yeah, follow me on socials at Wongo Music. But if you don't want to, fucking don't, because I don't care. Just enjoy your life. Follow who you want to follow.
I feel
don't feel obligated to do anything.
Dude, thank you so much, man. Keep safe. And hopefully we can see each other at some point this year. If not, definitely next year.
I know, 100%, mate. You're a great guy.
You too, love you too, man. And that is a wrap. Hope you enjoyed it. Please hit subscribe. Please give me some reviews. Send it to your mum, send it to your dad, or any of your mates if you think they're going to watch it. Hope you enjoyed it. I did. I loved that conversation. It was a good one. Keep safe. Have a great week. See you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.